Well, good morning and welcome to the Sustainable Living Program. I'm Rob Lori. Jay, are you there, Jungle Jay?
Can you hear me, Rob?
I can hear you. You sound good.
All right. Well, I want to welcome everybody to the Sustainable Living Program this morning. As Rob says, I'm Jungle Jay. I'm phoning in remotely this morning during the COVID crisis. My co-host, Tanya Vidovic, is away on a family day today, so we'll be fielding it alone today with Rob in the studio. So, Rob, how was your weekend?
It was great. I spent a lot of time outdoors, as I like to do on weekends, and got a lot of things done, so it was a good weekend. How about yours?
It was really good, and I want to tell you that I really enjoyed Florida this week, this time, and I'm looking forward, I guess, for a rebroadcast of that radio activity today.
Yeah, it's coming up at 11 o'clock.
I encourage all the listeners to listen in. It was wonderful.
Well, thank you.
On today's program, we're going to be discussing a topic that's become increasingly popular. It's always been popular, but it's become increasingly popular since the beginning of the pandemic. So we're going to be talking about growing our own food locally, growing it at home, as well as community gardens. And today we want to invite any community garden leader in our Tampa Bay area to call in and tell us a little bit about your own program. And also today we have, as our guest, one of the premier leaders in the community gardening and local food movement.
And Jay, did we lose you for a second?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
I believe I did drop off for a second. So as I was saying, today we have a wonderful guest in our, calling in today, and it's Kitty Wallace of the Coalition of Community Gardens. And welcome, Kitty.
Yes, good morning, Jay. Great to hear from you, and good morning, everyone. Looking forward to talking about community gardening and gardening in your own yard.
Well, wonderful. And so, Kitty, you're the leader of the Tampa Heights Community Garden. What have you got going on right now at the community garden?
Well, at the Tampa Heights Community Garden, we have experienced the overflow of enthusiasm for growing our own food right after the pandemic closed everything down in March, April. We had a lot of interesting situations where people who live like right around the corner have now, because they're working from home and taking walks and stuff, discovered the community garden. And it was kind of funny. And then we had a lot of people wanting to join in April, which is kind of a challenging time to start growing vegetables in Florida because you're running straight into the brutal heat of summer before most of the vegetables, if you plant them in April, will mature and fruit. But, you know, everybody was just so trying to do something in view of the pandemic that we had 12 gardeners start in April. And some of them got a few products, maybe a cucumber and some lettuce or some kale, and they experienced being part of the gardens. And then we put our summer cover crop on, and based on recommendation from Rick Martinez, the originator of the Sweetwater Farm back in the 90s, I asked him what was his best cover crop, and he said it was sun hemp. That's a S-U-N-N hemp. And so we planted that everywhere this summer in our garden for the summer cover crop. And we are noticing a real difference in the vigor and thriftiness of our fall plantings. Everything is just growing like crazy, and I can't attribute it to any other change. We didn't do anything really differently than the sun hemp that we planted in the summer. So I'm a big fan. How about you, Jay? Have you ever used the sun hemp for a summer cover crop?
I have not used sun hemp, but I have to assume then that it must be a good nitrogen fixer and must be adding lots of nutrients to the soil as it breaks down. Is that correct?
Yes, it is doing that as well as repelling root knot nematodes. And we have occasion to see a few of our gardens pulling up stubby little carrots for the first time. And, you know, we're in Florida, and we're going to have those nematodes in our garden. And contrary to my grandmother's opinion of nematodes, which she voiced loudly when I was about 8 and 9 following her around in her garden, and she was complaining about the nematodes, and I imagined they were some kind of monster toads, and I was frightened of the monster toads. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s when I realized that the word nematodes referred to this invisible little worm. So I was glad to know that at that point, no longer scared of toads in the garden. But, that we had quite a few folks pulling up, and you know how it is with carrots. You're waiting for 2 months and all excited and hoping to pull up this gorgeous carrot, and you pull up this little stubby, bless it. And, you know, then it was happening all over the garden. So we said, okay, well, we've got to figure this out. So did some research and went with the sun hemp. We'll see how our carrots grow this year.
Well, and seasoned gardeners like ourselves are well familiar with root knot nematodes and all of the different kinds of weeds and so forth that grow up in our gardens. And you make an important point about seasonality and new visitors. Our new listeners who may have come more recently to the Tampa Bay area maybe didn't realize that they, you know, can't plant in the same way that they did back in Ohio or New York. And so our summer season really requires that we put that cover crop down and sort of adopt a wait-and-see approach to some of those things. I've historically used sweet potatoes as a cover crop in the summertime, which then can then be turned back into the garden. And so, but I'm very, very interested in sun hemp, and will be interested in trying that. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF. If you'd like to call in and add to our conversation, you can call in on a studio line at 813-239-9663, or you can email DJ at WMNF.org. If you do email, I'll say that a concise, short email will be better for getting you on the air. You can call in on the air at any time. And also, I did want to mention that this is a good opportunity if you do have a community garden and you want to promote it to our listeners so they can come over and see how it's done, and in the same way that Kitty was describing in her neighborhood. We invite you to call in and tell us a little bit about where you are and what your program is all about. So,
Jay, that's a perfect opportunity for me to mention that our group of community gardeners, which is a network of community gardens throughout the West Central Florida area, which mission is to support and strengthen community gardening, is the Coalition of Community Gardens. And we have a website, and on their website is a list of all the gardens in the West Central Florida area. So you can find a garden near you. The website is called, very cleverly, coalitionofcommunitygardens.weebly.com. And there's information on how to start a community garden. I always recommend people take a look at the American Community Gardening Association's 10 steps to starting a community garden. I think that that's a good way to start looking at the planning that you'll need to do. It's a one-page, I love one-page information. It's a one-page piece of information of the 10 steps that you want to consider utilizing when you start a community garden. And I found it to be a very valuable publication. So that's on our website as well.
Yes, and we'll get all that information, and we'll put it on the WMNF Facebook page as well for our listeners to tune into.
Perfect.
And,
Great.
And check out. So we've already talked about the fact that summer is a tough time for us here in Florida, and that we're kind of a little different here, and that when the weather first starts to cool, as we are experiencing hopefully very soon, that this is usually the time when Florida gardeners are thinking about getting their crops into the ground. So, and there's several ways to find out. Of course, talking with people in your community is the best way to find out what's going on, and that's why we're trying to direct people to the community gardens today and get that information out to our listeners. But there's also sites like the IFAS Extension, who have good one-page, as you say, Kitty, one-page things are always great. And so IFAS Extension puts out a one-page meme almost that says edibles to plant in November. And so right now, what kind of things do you see as the appropriate things for going in the garden in November?
Well, just about anything. I recommend people hold off on planting the really heat-sensitive vegetables like beets and Brussels sprouts and even carrots. Although I must say, gardeners at the Tampa Heights Community Garden have planted carrots right in September, and they have gone buck wild. So we have carrots growing everywhere right now. And the Brussels sprouts are slow because they don't tolerate the heat, and the beets just need to be cooler. Spinach just died. Spinach never even darkened the sky with a germination. But maybe now that it's cooler, you can plant some spinach. Everything else should do fine, even lettuces. The things that are heat sensitive are the things that won't tolerate the heat in May. Some of the vegetables will get right through, and since we've had such mild winters, really only concerned about our tomatoes if we get a frost. And our peppers, depending on how young they are. But other vegetables like broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage and all of those things, kale, collards, they just sail right through a light frost with no problem, even lettuce. So
what we're talking about then is really a kind of a heat and cold sensitivity, so right. That our products like lettuces and the brassicas, which are your kales and collards and those kind of things, they tend to prefer a little bit cooler weather, and that's why, here in Florida, we like to wait until we get that first little cold front that goes through before we get those things in the ground. Otherwise, our lettuce will bolt and go to seed way before we want it to.
Right. Our lettuce has grown quickly in the gardens that have planted lettuce, and so I've been emailing those gardeners and saying, come, start harvesting, don't let it get so mature, and if people have planted lettuce, they should be harvesting those outer large leaves to keep the plant fooled about how it needs to keep producing leaves instead of seeds, and so far, we've made it.
All right. Well, again, I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to WMNF 88.5 FM Community Radio, completely community supported. If you'd like to call in and ask a gardening question or share about your community garden, you can call in at 813-239-9663. Rob, do we have any callers?
Yeah, we do. We've got, I should know this right now, Karen in Plant City is on the phone with us. Hi, Karen. How are you?
Good morning. It's a beautiful day. How is everybody there?
Doing well.
All right. Well, I'm just reporting from Plant City, our community garden. We've had some little disease problems this year, the first time I think that I can remember since we started the garden. And apparently that's kind of going around a little bit, according to the extension office. So we're all learning how to mitigate that and keep an eye on each other's beds and look for critters and funky leaves. Other than that, lots of other things are doing well. We are
Karen. Karen, what is the name of your community garden, and how can people get in touch with you?
Sure, Plant City Commons Community Garden. And they can look at our website, which is plantcitycommunitygarden.com. And they're certainly welcome to give me a call or text to 813-435-8111.
That's wonderful. And this is part of the opportunity we're hoping to create today, is for our listeners to be able to connect directly with the community garden in their area. So I appreciate very much you calling in and sharing this information.
Karen, brag a little bit and tell us what you're having the most success with this time.
Well, actually, there's sort of a mixed bag of things. I think some of the herbs and stuff are doing very well. We did a real nice sweet potato harvest, the first one so far. We've planted a couple beds strictly in sweet potatoes, so that's always fun. That's like a treasure hunt. And we've started some containers with a variety of gingers, turmerics, and galangal and things, and have made a shade area for those. And we're keeping those in containers just because I think it's going to be easier for us to harvest. It looks like my cucumbers are hanging in there, and a few of the sugar snap peas are now starting to, like, get cozy with a little bit cooler evening. So that and we're starting seedlings now for the cool weather things like that, like Kitty mentioned, the broccolis and cabbages and stuff.
All right.
How many gardeners would you say that you have in your community?
We have 40 listed right now.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It is for us. I mean, out here on the fringe.
That's a wonderful number. We at Beacon would be happy to have that kind of attendance.
I understand. We welcome anybody just to even come and visit. You don't have to, like, decide if you want to be a member or not. We have a lot of demonstration areas, aquaponics, and hydroponics that are actually under shelter in a greenhouse, besides the container garden and the members' beds. And, you know, we have a little botanical area out there, too, that's quite wonderful to walk around.
Well, that's great. And, of course, the wonderful thing about having a number of people in your community is, as you already alluded to, is that you can all look out for each other. You know, not everybody can be there every day, but that way there's always someone there to see if things are looking a little droopy, maybe they need a drink, and then we can help each other. So that's part of the wonderful thing about community-based growing.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Karen, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in.
That's great to hear from you, Karen.
I love talking.
Keep up the good work.
So, hope you get some more gardens calling in today, and have a good one.
All right. So our next caller is Izzy in Clearwater. And Izzy, you're on the air with Kitty Wallace and Jungle J. Hardiman.
Okay. Thank you, Jungle J. or anyone. I want to say hi to Jungle J. It's been a while, right, Jungle J?
Hey, Izzy. Yes. Do you have a question for us or a comment?
I do. It's having to do with composting. I'm going to guess that you maybe have done a whole program on composting at some point. Our daughter, Katie, and Jungle Dave, I may remember writing a sweet long note to, he's never met her, but she's way into the environment. She's a writer in D.C. where I was visiting recently. Anyway, she just got a Cadillac, of a compost bin. She had a friend of hers design a compost bin, and, you know, that's people in the suburbia and people even, you know, if you're in the right situation in the city, you can build a compost bin. Composting is such a great thing to be able to do to take away from the waste stream. And, you know, we know all about, most listeners probably know all about this, but I have a question. And I talked with Katie about it, and she, you know, putting eggshells in. And I don't know if you guys have heard of this, but it's been, my instruction, a place I used to live in, an intentional community I used to live in. Somebody caught me one time and said, you know, you got to wash those eggshells out. You can't leave stuff in there because that goes into the compost bin without washing them out. You know, this is a good hint that you're going to get farmers that are going to come in and start disturbing your compost. What are your thoughts about that, or have you heard of that?
Tell us, Kitty.
Oh, it's something that people who are very careful do with their eggshells before they bring them to the compost is to just give them a little rinse. The issue there is that there's protein matter left in the eggshells if they're not rinsed out, and that can generate some types of worms and just send off some signals to other critters who are looking for protein to come foraging through your compost. I think, you know, one unclean eggshell in a compost pile is not going to be a deal breaker. It's best to give them a little scrub, yes.
Yeah, okay. That's, I wasn't sure about that, but yeah, that could, they could, squirrels, whatever, chipmunks, and rats even could probably come looking for it. Mm-hmm.
I would add that, you know, there are artists and there are scientists in the gardening community. And, you know, some of us lean a little bit more just to the natural, organic, and understand that, you know, that eventually everything breaks down. If it will rot, it will compost.
Right.
Some of the considerations when you move into the urban environment, of course, are vermin. And that has become a real problem. And so it has become pretty much standard practice to make sure that you're not adding any animal fat, any animal protein to your compost. Because even if you're not adding enough that it's going to be a super attractant, it'll certainly attract things like raccoons or maybe even rats or squirrels to come and live through your compost. So I don't know that it's, you know, a deadly problem.
I don't think it's bad for plants. I think it's
certainly we want to discourage interlopers that might bring disease.
Right.
Yeah. I love raccoons, but I just don't want them to get too close and be around my house.
Exactly.
Well, if you attract them to your compost, they're going to notice your pineapples.
Right. Yeah, that's good. I love
Thanks
your humor, Jingle Jay. That's great. And keep up the good work. And I hope to see you down in Clearwater sometime.
All right. Thanks, Izzy.
Great.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Izzy. And our next caller is Bruce in Sarasota. Bruce, you're on the Sustainable Living Program, and we're talking about gardens. What's your question?
It's just more of a comment. I'm an environmental scientist, and I work for a big engineering company. And I'd gotten a call not too long ago from someone wanting to form a community garden in St. Petersburg. And he was a little bit concerned because the neighboring properties were boat repair and auto repair. And I do testing, and I sent him a proposal to test the soil and even the groundwater for potential issues. So in terms of community gardens, I just wanted to make a comment that the neighboring properties and the history of the property should be looked into for potential contamination issues that could maybe get into the crops or, you know, affect, you know, possibly get into the roots and the, you know, in terms of environmental
contamination.
Yes,
it's very important to know the history of the soil that you're going to be putting your plants in and any possible contaminants. We did that when we first started our Tampa Heights community garden. We had a neighbor who worked for an environmental company that did that more precise environmental testing, and we found that we had a little bit too much arsenic in the actual ground level soil. So we were planning on having raised beds anyway, but that sealed the deal. So we put our own soil in our raised beds after we covered the space between the ground soil and our raised beds.
Yeah, and
Bruce, are you still with us?
No, Bruce had to drop off. He wasn't able to hear Kitty at all. So we apologize. We've got some problems with our phone system. But you're listening to the Sustainable Living Program. I think Kitty and Bruce agree entirely.
Sounds like it.
Yes, you definitely need to know if you have any kind of contaminants in your soil before you just start growing your veggies in there, especially root crops. I mean, I'm not really wanting to eat a carrot or a turnip that is grown in a soil with too much this, that, or the other thing that could be harmful to me, but I recommend that strongly.
Which also makes a good argument for building your soil on top of the soil. Or indeed, you know, and I have built garden beds on top of concrete slabs. You know, you're not going to get those nice long carrots if you've only got a foot of soil, but, you know, this is another way that we can sort of mitigate you know, any contaminants or things that might be in the soil where we want to work, and that's what I hope to maybe speak to Bruce a little bit about what kinds of contaminants he'd be talking about, but unfortunately he had to drop off. Have you got someone else, Rob?
Well, the next question is from email. Dave's in Newport Richey, and he wants to start an aquaponics garden, and he's wondering where you might get media for the aquaponics. I think I read that right.
Okay. Aquaponics means that you're growing fish in one part of your system and vegetables in the grow bed on the other part of your system, and the water is circulating between the fish and the vegetables. So when he uses the word medium, I'm thinking he wants to know where he's going to plant the seeds that are going to go in the grow bed in the water. And we use a cocoa core seed, I don't know what the word to call it, but it's a seed thingy. And it's made out of cocoa core, and we put the seed in there and keep it covered and moistened until it germinates. And then it's basically only about 3/4 of an inch high when we put that into the grow bed rafts that are in our water section for the vegetables. I hope that answered his question. Did it sound like that's what he was asking?
It sounds like that, and I'm sure he'll email back if he wants more a different angle on it. Well, you're listening to the Sustainable Living Program on WMNF in Tampa, and we're answering all your questions about gardening. Kitty Wallace is here. She's with the Tampa Heights Community Garden, and Jungle Jay is here. Tanya's taking the week off, and Kitty, if we were to start planting things right now, we could use seedlings and we could use seeds. Just describe what should we be planting using seeds right now, and what should we be planting using seedlings?
Well, yeah, you want to understand that most vegetables are going to take, rule of thumb, 90 days from planting to harvest. There are those that are longer, and those like radishes that are shorter that will be even in the neighborhood of 40 days, and you're pulling radishes out of the ground. Some others that are like carrots we find take about 100 days to go to harvest. But if you think in terms of 90 days, that'll give you a scope of what you're anticipating. So if you wanted to have green beans for Thanksgiving at the end of November, you would have planted them in seeds 90 days before that. But oh, if you missed it and you didn't get the seeds in the ground 90 days before, then buy some seedlings and plant those, because that'll shortchange your harvest time by about 30 days. If those seedlings that you'll buy from the box stores or the garden stores, those are about 30 days old, so that'll cut your harvest time down to about 60 days. So, yay, you can plant those seedlings in September, and you'll have green beans by the end of November for Thanksgiving. Or if you miss that, you'll have them for Christmas. Our gardeners kind of like to think of all the things that they're planting in their gardens are going to, you know, go to the family table at Thanksgiving or Christmas, and that makes them happy.
That brings up another good point about community gardening and the gardening community, because the community gardens are established for people to gather together in a single place to grow their food and vegetables and so forth. But that community also extends out into the wider community where people are doing those plant starts, you know, as cottage industry. And I think that, you know, while we can go and get them at the big box store, I think it's quite important that we get involved in our local growing community via social media or what have you, so that we can patronize one another and build the local community that sort of circumvents that need to go to a big box store and send our money and resources outwardly when we recirculate it in the community.
So Jay and Kitty, if we're looking for non-GMO and organic seedlings or seeds, and we don't want to go to the big box store, what are some of the avenues here in the Tampa Bay area where we can find non-GMO and organic seeds and seedlings?
Well, here in Hillsborough County, we have David Whitwam of Whitwam Organics, whose whole mission is to provide those types of opportunities for people to grow. you will just not find that at the big box store. So you're going to need to go with a local grower to, have those things. What do you think, Jay and Pinella?
Well, I agree. And again, one of the great reasons to look locally is, you know, besides the carbon footprint and the driving and you know, doing all the plastics and so forth, many of the big growers that supply the big boxes also do things with their starch that give them a longer shelf life at the big box, which includes putting soil suppressants and so forth, and so that the plants don't bolt on the shelves. So I would say that, you know, as local as you can get them, the better. And if you can, you know, if you can know it, that they're coming from your neighbor, then you've established a personal relationship too, which is, you know, the essence of community and why we want to promote community gardening and local growing.
Yes, and many of the community gardens have their own seed starting teams. So if a person is listening and they're interested in finding out more about how to get seedlings that are produced locally, find out where your closest community garden is and touch base with them and find out if they have any starch that you could buy. And that you'll get yourself connected to a wonderful group of people and know more than you know now.
And if you are growing those starts and have them available, they're very popular right now. So call in to our program at 239-9663. That's 813-239-9663, and tell us what you've got.
Great idea,
Kitty. Is this a good time of year to start cucumbers and squash?
Yes.
And is it the wrong time of year to start watermelon?
It is the wrong time of year to start watermelon, but, you know, people do whatever they want to do, because I've got a gardener who's got three little girls and they wanted to plant watermelon, so they planted it and it's growing like wildfire. And I think that might have something to do with the fact that it's not really been cool. It's been warm, sort of like watermelon likes to grow in. So, you know, our world is sort of, you know, topsy-turvy, and people plant whatever they want to plant and they find out later. But traditionally, this is not a good time to be planting watermelon. It's a much better plant time to be planting zucchini and squash and cucumbers. And when you start to see those little plants growing, find a way to let those plants grow vertically. They absolutely have to have enough air circulating around their leaves to keep them healthy. Those types of plants that we're discussing right now, they are very susceptible to all the humidity and heat, and they get a powdery mildew, and then you're watching your plants fight to see who's going to win. The death of the leaves before the squash is ready to harvest, you know, it's tragic. So get some tomato cages, the easiest things to do, and let your squash, zucchini, and such grow up, and they get circulation, and they do much better.
Well, we've got more questions.
I would add to that it's always a good time to be planting any kinds of seeds with your children. You know, and
oh, yeah.
And there's nothing that promotes gardening so well as success. But also, we learn an awful lot from our failures.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's nice to get advice on the radio and from friends and so forth, because that helps us with the success. But I would, you know, it's sort of like, when's the best time to plant a tree is 25 years ago. You know, just the simple act of sticking seeds in a Dixie cup, putting them on the windowsill, is a wonderful experience for any child.
Let's go to Chris, who's calling from Sweetwater. Chris, are you at Sweetwater Farms?
Good morning, Rob. Not today. I'm in St. Pete. You know, we kind of split our time between St. Pete and Tampa on the farm. But I'll just piggyback off Jay. You know, the best time to plant a fruit tree is 25 years ago. The next best time is today. And we do have fruit trees available here at the farm as well. So we do have our Sunday market. I know you guys are talking about seedlings and starts. We do have some seeds available at the farm, and we do have a few seedlings. You know, our seedlings are kind of precious to us right now, because we're planting and we're putting them in our fields as well. So,
and Chris, just for folks that haven't been to Sweetwater, where is it?
We are off of Hillsborough Avenue, about 10 minutes from the airport, So west of the airport between Hanley and Sawyer off Hillsborough Avenue in Town and Country. We are a little slice of paradise in the urban metropolis. We got our 5-acre organic urban farm that Rick Martinez started in 1993. So I was building soil, building up, and we've got mulch, we've got compost, and we get our compost from the zoo, or we get our zoo poo, our manure from the zoo, and we sort of break it down 9 months, 12 months. And so that's what some of our building blocks for our soil. So we do have some compost and mulch and some seeds and starts and fruit trees. So a lot of things that people need to start their community garden or grow in their own yard. And you can come out on Sunday morning and see how we do things and volunteer on the farm 9 a.m. to 12. And then the market starts right after that, 12 to 3, where you can see John Butts, who I would normally be talking to on this radio. But John was out at the farm yesterday, and he'll be back at the farm next Sunday.
Yeah, shout out to John Butts. Good morning, John, if you're listening.
Yeah. John's out there. You know,
not to have seen you in quite a while.
We're fortunate that we do have some good veteran growers in the area. And, you know, with farming, you know, nobody's an expert. Jay was kind of touching that. You know, you need to kind of learn and learn your soil and learn your yard and grow your own. But it is nice to have access to some of our veteran growers in the area. So we're very fortunate. But it's really about building soil, building community, you know, preserving the land or regenerating the land and land stewardship. And that's what we're all doing. And I'm very thankful for Kitty, Rob, and Jay for helping make that happen. And John,
well, be sure to
John's
get in.
Been doing a long
be sure
time.
To get in on the WMNF Sustainable Living page and share all your information, Chris. We'd love to have it on there.
Yeah, Sweetwater's 100% volunteer run, but you know, we use a lot of mulch. So if anybody's interested in teaching a class there or workshop and teaching us, otherwise you can come out and learn what we know. So you know, we're all learning together as we continue to grow.
Well, Chris from Sweetwater Farms, thanks a lot. Thank you for coming on. All right, take care. Bye-bye. And Jungle Jay and Kitty, we're going to go to Annie, who's in Tampa. And Annie, thanks for calling into the program. What would you like to say?
Well, I just want to tell y'all that, I mean, Kitty Wallace, you know, she is just the best. She gives so much to the community. She was my garden club president in Tampa, Florida, and I was working with her for a couple years, and it was just a wonderful thing that this woman just gives to the world. And but I did want to go back to what everybody is talking about getting seeds. Tanya actually, Vadidovich, she started an online group which is called Tampa Gardening Swap. And the one that has a lot of people, because there was a secondary one that started up. And in that group, we share seeds and cuttings and all kinds of knowledge, plant knowledge and growth knowledge and pest knowledge all the time. And it's super helpful to individuals that are new or even veterans. You know, we get to get some unusual things that maybe we wouldn't have gotten before. I know that I just put on pictures last night and had some papaya and actually some green amaryllis seeds, and people are sending me envelopes, and I'll send them directly to them. And we do that. I have a lot of unusual vegetables in my garden. In fact, I have a big garden in my tiny South Tampa area. And probably, you know, tons of, it's a food forest, really, lots of annuals as well. And what Kitty was saying is, and well, everybody really was talking about how we learn from each other, and we learn a lot from our mistakes. And, you know, the next season, it's always the next season on what we're going to do and how we're going to improve. And I do completely organic. No spray, no, not even water. I let all the ladybugs take care of all the problems, and the parasitic wasps and so on. So, and I also, whenever you know, talking about the compost, you know, I get my manure from Dancing Goat Farm,
she allows people to go over there and pitchfork their own straw stall. So I use that. And then there was another place in Newport Ritchie. They collect, or the city collects all the waste, the green waste, and compost it. And you can go over and get that for free. And then I also get chips from different wood chips from different tree trimmers. They want a place to drop it, so you can get it dropped at your place. And so there's just a myriad of ways to do that. And I do. I have two compost containers, but I have lids on them. And I live in the South Tampa area where we had rats, and I've never had a rat problem. But I do put egg shells in there, and I don't wash them.
Well, Annie, thanks for taking the time to shout out to the Tampa Gardening Swap Facebook page, which has 15,000 members at last recollection, and you're one of the leaders of that page, and it is so helpful to the community.
We're talking over each other,
because I need to walk out my door. So, but it's just a wonderful group, like Jungle Day was saying, the community of gardeners. The gardening community, the people that want to help each other, support each other, and just do the best we can to make this a better planet. So that's it.
All right, Annie, thanks a lot. Annie, thank you. And Kitty, we do have this phone problem, and I apologize. So people weren't able to hear what you said, but what would you add to what Annie just told us?
Well, I was just appreciating that Annie gave a shout-out to the Tampa Gardening Swap Facebook page, which has about 15,000 members and is very active in people asking for help or sharing, or if people have extra cuttings, and, it's a really good sharing of knowledge and resources. So thanks for calling in, Annie.
All right.
I went and looked up Tampa Gardening Swap, and it is 14,045 members. And so that means that wherever you are in the Tampa Bay area, there's someone near you that's a member of that page and has got seeds and cuttings and can't wait to have you come and pick them up from them. So I would encourage everybody to join that also. Also, Annie spoke about the Dancing Goat Farm, which is in Oldsmar. I would totally encourage everyone to get connected. If you've got a home garden, to get your goat manure and stable dressing from Pam Lund at the Dancing Goat. It's amazing stuff. And also, she mentioned chip drop and getting wood chips dropped off to start your garden. And I can tell you that just layering in wood chips with the manure underneath will give you almost an instant garden. Certainly after a few months, it'll be perfect. And what I always do is I just plug in tree service, free chips, and my zip code. You'll get the company that is nearest to you, and they are more inclined to drop off with you on their way back to the shop instead of to divert to the landfill to pay money for the drop fee. So those are a couple free things that Annie mentioned, so I really appreciate that.
Well, if you're listening to the program and you've got a question about gardening, you can email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. And our guest today is Kitty Wallace, who is a retired educator, past president of the Tampa Garden Club, and garden coordinator of the Tampa Heights Community Garden. Jungle Jay is here, and we've got a question from Tamara in St. Pete. Hi, Tamara. You're on the program.
Hi, I'm a fairly new gardener, and I was listening to the program and wanted to call in and ask. So this year I got one of those garden tower things. They're round and they rotate, and it has a compost in the middle, and I planted my start, and everything was going so well, and I had these beautiful little eggplants and all sorts of stuff and peppers, and then the squirrels literally just ate everything. They even ate the hot peppers, and I was wondering what we should do about the squirrels.
You go, Jay.
I know. It is a perennial problem, and squirrels are super intelligent animals. And, all the creatures that like to live around humans similar enemies because they're just like us. I don't know if I have a good answer for that. I know that my friend Paul Zamota, who you'll find on Tampa Gardening Swap, has a skillet solution for them.
I'm going to share something that we just noticed at the Tampa Heights Community Garden. A couple of years ago, a couple of gardeners bought those rosin owls. They're about, 18 inches high or so. Stuck them on a post, one in the west side of the garden, one in the east side of the garden. And I swear that we have not had squirrels eating any of our vegetables since they put those really life-size, life-looking owls in our garden.
Oh.
It's not a scientific response, but it's what we've noticed.
Wow. Okay. Because everything was going so well. And it was this round garden that spun, and I was thinking, oh, well, this is so easy. I did it. Like, it was my first attempt at gardening, and things were going wonderfully. And then literally I walked out, and everything was chewed up. And
yeah. Well, I think they cost about, like, $35, so they're not cheap. But I'm aware that's what happened.
Okay, I'll try.
Well, Tamara, how tall is your tower? I mean, how big a space are you growing?
It's almost as tall as I am, and I'm 5'3". It's pretty tall. And it looks like, I guess it looks sort of like a strawberry planter, and I think strawberries, has like little pockets. And so
right.
I have various, peppers in it. And at the top, I had eggplant and I had some herbs, and it's very pretty. And the peppers are growing nicely, but they just keep getting eaten. So,
The only other solution that I could think of, and because you're doing a tower situation, would be to do a simple cage of hardware cloth. That could go around it, and either you could lift it and remove it, or put a door on it. The squirrels are a notorious intelligent pest that can get around almost anything we could come up with.
They are the circus acrobats of the animal world, right?
No question.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tamara.
Great question.
All right, if you've got a question for our guest, email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. And Seth in St. Pete writes this question, Kitty and Jay. Seth says, could your guest please recommend some books on sustainable agriculture as well as permaculture? Thanks in advance.
Can I ever? I am going to recommend Gaia's Garden. It's a guide to home-scale permaculture. I found that it's the easiest read and really describes the techniques of permaculture real well. That would be my number one go-to. How about you, Kitty? What would you recommend?
Well, I think you've got that. That's the one I would recommend.
Yes, I'll mention it again, and we'll put a link to it on the Sustainable Living Facebook page, but it's Gaia's Garden, GAIA's Garden, A Guide to Home-Scale Permaculture. And it's very readable. It's actually designed for a northern climate, so when it comes to speaking about different tree guilds and planting things together that'll describe walnut trees and those, there are substitutes here. And again, another thing that I would recommend as far as community and beyond the books would be to get involved with the Sustainable Urban Agriculture Coalition. This is an organization in South St. Petersburg that is just wonderful to be a member of as far as sharing information like this on resources and books and all kinds of things. So I would recommend that as well, the SUAC. Sustainable Urban Agriculture Coalition. You can find them on Facebook as well.
Kitty and Jay.
There's a permaculture group headed by Corrine. What's Corrine's last name?
Brennan? Corrine Brennan. Create Clear Water would be a way for them to get in touch with her.
What's it called?
Create Clear Water.
Okay.
Is a good way to get in touch with Corrine, and she is, again, an outstanding community connector and has a permaculture farm up in Fernando, but also does classes down here in the Pinellas and Tampa area.
Kitty and Jay, we're down the last few minutes. I want to ask you about fertilizer. When should I fertilize in my vegetables? Let's say I've got peppers or tomatoes, or I've got herbs or squash or pumpkins. Do I need fertilizer? Or if I've got the mulch right, can I just let my crop grow without fertilizer? And if I need fertilizer, what's the best kind?
What we do at the beginning of each planting season, we add organic amendments to our already super organic soil that we get from a local grower. And we add a combination. This is after a year's research on organic amendments. We have a big tub that we put blood meal, bone meal, and cottonseed meal, and we mix it all up, and everybody gets like a coffee can or two to add and disperse lightly throughout the top section of their soil at the beginning of the fall planting season and beginning of spring. And then beyond that, we recommend a fish emulsion as a fertilizer, probably about a month after your plants have gotten a good start. It'll be time to give them a watering with fish emulsion. And just watch the plants and see what they're doing before you just start loading stuff on, because everything has consequences.
Jay, would you add to that?
As a permaculture purist, you know, I started 11 years ago at Beacon Food Forest Gardens, and we basically did the standard peat mulch-type style bed. We mowed it and cleared all the grass, put down a heavy layer of manure, and then wood chips on top of that, a little bit of seaweed for trace minerals. And then that soil has grown every year to become more and more rich. And then so at the beginning of each season, when I'm turning under my sweet potatoes, then I'll go ahead and add some more of Pam Lund's organic goat manure and stable dressing, more wood chips, and then throughout the season we'll just top dress with manure and water it in, and it just works wonderfully.
Now we're down to the last 2 minutes, but Meg sent this email in. She says, this year I added cured biochar to my ground grow box soil. A video about it convinced me to give it a try. It came from Vermont, as none is available around this area. What are your thoughts about biochar?
Have you experienced with that, Jay?
I have made a ton of biochar, and what I would say is if you're buying the product, then it's probably already charged. If you're getting it locally or making it yourself, it's wonderful stuff. It's what got me involved in permaculture in general from my experiences in the jungles of South America and so forth. And I can tell you that it is amazing stuff, but it needs to have the nitrogen added first, so it needs to be mixed with an emulsion, a fish emulsion. Urine is fine. Anything with a lot of nitrogen.
Well, Kitty Wallace, if people want to see the Tampa Heights Community Garden, do you do tours? And if people want to grow there, how can they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me at my email address, which is kittwal@aol.com. And we'll be glad to set up a tour. Just come and enjoy the garden and watch the butterflies, you know, doing their thing, and maybe you'd like to join, and we'll find a spot for you. Come on down.
That sounds great. And Jay, what's where can people find the Sustainable Living Facebook page?
Well, it's on Facebook. It's just the WMNF Sustainable Living.
Easy enough. All right. Well, Kitty Wallace from the Tampa Heights Community Garden, thank you for coming on the Sustainable Living Program.
Just great to see everybody here.
Thanks
everybody.
So much, Kitty. Take
care.
Thank you, Rob.
Thanks, Jay. And John Butts did write in and said, yes, I am listening to the program too.
He'd be happy to know. Yay for John.
That radio never goes off at his place.
Good job.
All right. Well, Kitty Wallace and Jungle Jay, thanks a lot. And Jay, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks on the program.
We'll see you in 2 weeks, Rob.
All right. Thank you.
Great.
Well, you're listening. Bye-bye. You're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg. And in just a moment, we're going to get the latest news from NPR. So stay tuned. This is WMNF in Tampa.